Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.
Hey, True Crimecast fans, John here. Jamie and I would like to play the full audio from the interview that our writer, Mackenzie, was able to obtain from some of her friends who just so happened to be in the area at the time of the Amanda Knox case. We hope you enjoy this interview, and I'd like to say a special thanks to our writer, Mackenzie, for not only doing a great job with helping us research and write up these cases, but for going above and beyond and obtaining this audio. Thank you so much, Mackenzie. You guys enjoy this conversation.
How about you guys just tell me about Perugia?
It was an incredibly quaint hilltop town in central Italy. I would compare it. I grew up in, you know, Lakeland, Florida. So we were about equal distance from Tampa and Orlando, kind of equal distance from the north of Florida to the south of Florida. And that's very much what Perugia felt like to me. Like, it was some, like, location wise, it was just very centralized between like Rome and Florence and then like the north of Italy and the south of Italy. It was just kind of this quaint little hilltop town just right in the center of Italy.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, and really if you ever get the chance to go to Perugia, it is a hilltop town completely secluded and isolated from exterior influence. So what you get in that town is daily, it feels like a bubble.
It does.
It felt like a bubble because you were at the top of a hill. Any way to get in or out of the city required you to bus down to the bottom of the hill to be able to catch a train, to get on another bus, to get to the airport. So it really was its own little bubble away from everything else, and it was wonderful.
And there were hills on top of this hill, because literally, you know, your parents are always like, oh, I had to walk uphill both ways.
Oh yeah.
Like, in order for us to get from where Kate and I were living, we were roommates, in order for us to get where we needed to get to, like the building that had our classes and stuff, we literally had to walk uphill, over a hill
both ways.
It was on the other side of this hill, and so it was just,
but it, you know, and I feel like any exchange student staying in Italy might probably say something similar, but it just feels like, because this was a small town, that it's even different, because you didn't have like the big city influence of like Florence or Rome. Mm-hmm. Sure. It's small. It's small town living.
Yeah.
A lot of the locals spoke some English, but it was not like Florence or Rome. Like, when we went there and we tried to speak Italian, they would just answer us in English. Like, it was very much a teaching town where if you tried to speak Italian, the locals would try and engage with you in Italian as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember going to eat one time in Rome, and I was with my parents. I was trying to impress them with my Italian, and the waiter just says, not English. It's faster. You know, but when you lived in Perugia and you would struggle through Italian, so patient, so kind, and they would work with you and they would, you know, help you speak it using the right diction and accents and
even hand
like they, like that city. I will say, I'm so curious if there are people who experienced that town after the murder.
Yeah.
If they experienced something different.
So, did I tell you that I went back?
Yeah, I knew you went back, but I don't know how it equated for you.
The bubble popped.
Oh, bam.
The murder put
it on
the
map. That's what I thought. Oh, no.
It was a lot more graffiti. It literally, the murder popped the bubble that was Perugia.
Oh, no.
Like, places that used to be, like the vineyard, that used to have a beautiful green door and a stone wall, and then, like, these vines kind of cascading over. The vines were dead. The wall and the door both had graffiti all over it. And that's kind of, like, the feel that I had. It was actually a little depressing going back, even if it had been about 10 years. But yeah. just like it had popped the bubble is the best way I could say it.
Wow.
Oh, geez.
So then how did you guys, tell me a little more, how did you learn about what happened to Meredith Kircher?
Were we walking in the piazza together?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was the day after. We had no, it was maybe like 2 days. It was like November 2nd.
Yeah. It was a few days after. And we had been out in the city, and for us to get to where we lived, we had to walk through the main sort of like hub, but there was this main piazza, Piazza Quattro Novembre. And on one side of the piazza, there was this beautiful fountain in the middle. And on the other side, there was this really big Duomo, this church. And on the side of the church, there were these, like, how many steps would you say?
It was about 20.
20 steps that went up the side of the wall. And that's where a lot of the people in the town hung out. And we were walking through the piazza. We were going to go past the Duomo. And there was this massive picture of Meredith Kircher. It was literally draped over the steps. Like, it all, if there were 20 steps, it took up maybe 15 of them.
Wow.
And that the whole picture was surrounded. They'd lit candles around the entire border. And I remember, I don't remember who we were walking with, but I said, oh, what happened? And they said, this girl was murdered. And I honestly said, just, man, that sucks.
Yeah, we had no idea because we weren't fluent enough to know what local news or anything, what had happened. And then, but then also our school didn't say anything to us. As far as when we went to class, there was nothing shared to students. I remember getting an email because we, at that time, you know, you would check your emails, and I had gotten a couple emails from my parents, from, you know, people, friends and other acquaintances, like, hey, are you okay? And I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. Why? What? The news had hit internationally before we got it and understood it because everything was in Italian. We just weren't fluent enough.
So what were your, as you guys started to learn more about what happened, what were your initial thoughts about Amanda Knox?
To be completely honest, I had a cursory sort of interest in it. It was something that had happened, but I come from a not a super metropolitan area, but I looked up, and where I came from, there were 38 murders in Lakeland, Florida in 2007. So I hate to say it, but the true crime part of me was like, oh, that really stinks that that happened. But murder was much more common in the news where I came from. So I didn't really, it didn't really register how big it was. We didn't understand the impact that it would have. And I think for me, coming from, you know, a
high crime
area, just they hadn't had a murder, I think, in like 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In Perugia, it was a sleepy town. Like the most that people got arrested for or, you know, citations for were smoking marijuana. And so, you know, I remember it kind of unfolding, and we had a friend, he was an assistant professor who was the MSNBC correspondent in Italy. He had written a book called Little Blue, What to Do in Perugia. And so he was kind of a friend of ours, and he kept us in the loop, I think, more than anything else because we didn't speak Italian.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, I remember when it happened, we would watch the news. But again, we didn't speak Italian, so it was, you're watching footage and you're inferring based off of the footage and then what little kind of translation you get through your professor or through, like the assistant professor that we were friends with, you know. Whenever you could find somebody who would speak English, you would kind of get an idea. And what blew me away was, it seemed like Italy's political system is in exact opposite of the U.S., where in the U.S. you are innocent until proven guilty. In Italy, you are guilty until proven innocent.
Mm-hmm.
So there seemed to be a lot of focus on Amanda and her boyfriend, Raphael, at the time, where they felt, from my perspective, it felt like they were focusing on them a lot. And I would have thought, why are you focusing on the roommates? Why aren't you focusing more on the evidence or the things in the house or, you know, what Meredith did that night. But there was a lot of, it felt like sensationalism mm-hmm. around focus on that couple. And I remember, again, it was a translation from someone, so the validity may not be there. But I remember hearing a quote from the mayor or the, I don't know what their terms are called in Italy, but the mayor of Perugia, where he was adamant that Amanda Knox would pay for the things that she had done. And I remember thinking, you have no proof. Right. You have no evidence that shows that she is guilty of this. Why are you jumping to say something so harsh to say that she will pay for her crimes when you have no proof?
Right.
I remember being like, oh my God, as an American studying abroad, that to me was the scariest thing, was that the jump to guilt. I worried that there was a certain sense of, are you trying to make an example of American tourists? Are you trying to show strength in the face of a global audience? It just felt like it was different than what we would have expected if a murder had happened in the U.S.
Yeah, yeah. Did you guys, did you feel a difference in the air in Perugia after the murder? Were locals talking about it? Was there tension? Like, did it change? I know, Tiffany, you said it popped the bubble, but like in real time, did you see that? Did you feel it in the air?
You know, what's crazy is there was two very, very different truths that were existing in Perugia at that time. And I want to almost call it like a dichotomy of like the two sides of the coin that were really evident, because you have the Italians in the media just like skewering Amanda Knox. But then I'm at like the Mercato Caperto. So where you would go and buy your fruit and everything was this outdoor market. And, you know, I would try and speak Italian, but obviously I would do it with an American accent. And I would have Italians actually say to me, I'm so sorry to hear about the American. And I would say, thank you. But in my mind, I'd be like, I don't know, she's innocent. I appreciate that sentiment. But so we have this sort of sensationalized thing happening in like all the newspapers and on TV and stuff. But actual Italians talking to me actually apologized, you know, about the American things that were happening. And I remember that conversation so vividly because I said, thank you. But I had no idea if she was guilty or not, because I had barely any sort of knowledge about what kind of actual evidence that they were gathering on her. Yeah, you know, and it's like it could equate to the media influence in the U.S., right? Where media, what is portrayed in the media is different than the actual experience you may have, right? So I agree. I felt like the media portrayal of the situation was very different than what it was when you still lived in the city, because
I spoke to the locals.
The locals, it didn't feel as sensationalized. There really was no difference mm-hmm. in us, you know, having our daily life routine of going to the market or going out to eat or interacting with locals. There was no difference before or after the murder at that time, like during the event.
The only time that I felt a little uncomfortable and felt like the tension in the air was bigger or like greater is when we went to this sort of bar hangout that she had gone to maybe the night of her death, Latana. It was when they were retracing Meredith Kircher's steps leading up to the There was this local, I want to say club, for lack of a better word. We didn't really visit it often, but I remember going to it after the timeline and after they were trying to put things together and just kind of having the moment of, not that it necessarily could have been me, but that it could have been me. You know, we were going to the same places that she was. We were, you know, we could have been there, not necessarily that night, but we could have been there at a different time that she was. We could have interacted with whoever she interacted with, because we were, Perugia is so small, we were going to the same places. And I don't think that really hit me until we had gone to Latana after they had talked about that being a place that I think she had worked there or she had gone there.
No, it was called The Rock, right? Something The Rock.
I'd have to look it up. I remember Latana.
Yeah. The bar that she frequented, that Meredith frequented, not Amanda.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Right. Yeah.
Wow.
So that was kind of crazy, just realizing, wow, we're in this place that she was here doing, talking to the same people. I mean, Perugia is not big.
Yeah.
And I think that may have influenced just why the people were so desperate to talk about Amanda Knox, because they needed someone, they needed an answer. It wasn't, oh my gosh, we have a murder running loose in a small town. I think there was a lot of comfort in the media and stuff for them to look at Amanda and say, oh, this is our murder, because it was almost comforting for the citizens as well.
Right. Instead of thinking that there was a murderer in their small town.
Which there was.
Right.
Yeah.
So what about when you guys came back to the U.S. and you got to see a little more of the American coverage and get a little more perspective on things? And, you know, did you guys have a different feel for it when you came back?
Yeah. I mean, it was surreal. We had had several, Kate and I had had several conversations, because Meredith and Amanda were both our age.
Yeah.
You know, and this was supposed to be an experience. They were coming back and then they were annoying their friends with all their stories of abroad, you know, as is your right when you study abroad, to come in home and annoy all of your family and friends with your like myriad of stories. And it was two horrible endings to something that was so influential to Kate and I, you know, like just the experience alone and coming home, like, you know, Meredith deserved that. She deserved to be able to come home from this experience and have this normal homecoming, seeing her family, seeing her friends, telling them about all of her adventures. And we were the same age. And so as years went on and she's convicted and now she's, you know, she's speaking fluent Italian. She's still over there. Like, Amanda Knox is convicted. She's speaking fluent Italian. And then, you know, hey, there's documentaries. Hey, there's an adaptation featuring Hayden Panettiere.
Yeah.
There's all of these, you know, Lifetime movies.
Foxy Knoxy.
And we're still living sort of parallel lives, because we're still at the same age. We're still gaining equal distance from this horrible event that happened, this horrible murder, but our post study abroad existence is so wildly different.
Wow, I never thought of it that way. Yeah, you guys were like in the same place and have taken very different paths afterward.
Yeah, I thought I would think about her often. Every time that Amanda Knox was brought back up, because her case was going back to trial, or, you know, they would just be like, oh, it's been a year, whatever the case may be, and she was still in jail. And it just made me feel for her, because my personal opinion is that she was made an example of, that they were trying to show that Americans, whether it's Americans or whomever, foreigners can't come to this country and, you know, think that they're above the law. And, you know, that no one is above the law or should be above the law, but it just felt like the way that they handled the case and the way that they took, you know, a social media platform, like at the time it was MySpace, it wasn't even Facebook.
Right, yeah.
So they took MySpace, which is, at that time, everyone was just learning how to engage in a social media world. So you threw all kinds of crazy stuff online, and they turned it against her and made a whole media persona. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't imagine the type of life she's had to build for herself, and the protection, the mental protections she's had to build for herself. And then what she did, what she lost. And, you know, what Meredith lost. Not only did she lose out on the experience, she lost her life.
Yeah.
But then you had somebody else who really was in the wrong place, the wrong time, was a adolescent, still developing mind, not knowing how to figure this out in a foreign country, like just completely robbed of her experience and her life too, in a different way.
Yeah.
It's very, it was, it,
and everyone had a perception. She should be grieving like this. She should not be acting like this. Mm-hmm. She should be A, B, and C. And again, she's just, she was
21.
Yeah.
And this sort of thing where, you know, just like I was not, I didn't really personalize Meredith Kircher's death because I, again, was from a place where death happened. And yeah, it was a sleepy town. And I think it was so much more personal for the town itself for it to have happened. But even I can understand where Amanda Knox's sort of mentality is when we come from a culture where, you know, you're watching true crime. You're like, there's these things that happen. And I honestly think that she wasn't acting guilty or she wasn't acting this or she wasn't acting this way, because I don't know how much it really sunk in at that time. The impact and everything. Like, I would be obviously like devastated if one of my, like you, if something had happened to you, but we'd also been friends for 3 years. It's, you know, we developed friends and stuff, but there's also just this sort of idea and concept of like, I don't know, like a mental distancing almost to protect yourself. I mean, I don't know, like, cause I'm not a psychologist, but every single person suddenly became a psychologist.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like everyone suddenly was like, you know, oh, this is, she's not acting in the way that we expect her to act. She's not acting in this way.
Well, and her and Meredith and Amanda only knew each other for what, 6 weeks?
Yeah, like it was a very short, it was about 2 months, like 6 to 8 weeks. Yeah. And that, yeah, I've noticed that too. Like when the documentary started coming out and you learned, you know, we had more facts. I remember thinking they really portrayed these two girls as like bestie roomies.
Yeah.
And they had only known each other, you know, 6-8 weeks.
Yeah. Not enough to say that you've built a bond that says that you would be a devastated, fall to your knees wreck.
Right.
I'd be in shock.
I'd be scared. You're not only that, but you're in a foreign country where you don't speak the language. You've managed to build a relationship with a, you know, with a boyfriend. So, of course, that's going to be the person you try and lean into in all of it.
Mm-hmm.
Find comfort, which, again, they villainized.
Right. Like, so, yeah, the perception of what an expected behavior is was, that to me was crazy.
Yeah.
And I honestly feel bad for the law enforcement people who were the first on the scene, because the more and more we find out, the more and more they bungled it. You know, like cross-contamination, they didn't really handle the evidence as they should have, which has caused an issue. But again, they hadn't had a murder in 5 years.
Right.
Not like these skills were kept up. They're not in Chicago. Mm-hmm. They're not in Central Florida. You know, they're not dealing with multiple cases of homicide and have these, like, you may have these procedures set in place, but again, 5 years is actually a really long time.
Yeah.
To not investigate in that way and then have something so horrendous happen.
Yeah.
And I think they were out of their depth, and I think that they weren't willing to admit that.
Yes.
Yeah.
So much.
Yeah. To not have a murder in 5 years and then one that brutal. Yeah.
Yes.
I think you're right.
We're not just talking about one local turning against another local. We're talking about international students.
Right.
And time you cross a global border, you're asking for other countries to get involved and engage and apply pressure,
scrutiny
and pressure to solve the problem.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, this was a perfect storm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And again, social media was just in its infancy.
Yep.
And how people got their information and opinions, reading online, like actual news, you know, before even we had a fake news, sort of like the words for fake news, the court of public opinion was the end all and be all.
Yeah.
And it was rough on her.
This is the rise. Yeah.
Yeah. That was my last question. Is there anything else about this whole experience you want to add?
You know, I would just say, you know, and Tiff's been able to get back to Perugia since it happened. But, you know, while we were living there, like during the time that it happened, it was eye-opening from a student international perspective to be like in the time and place when an event like that happens. But, you know, it really truly amazed me. Like, and it sounds maybe a little insensitive, but none of that soured our experience as far as like the people, the culture, the environment, the engagement, the town, the, there was no like mass shunning of just because we were American.
Right.
No, we truly felt embraced, and the experience was top notch. And I don't think you could say the same if the event had happened in Rome.
No.
Right.
It was because Perugia is what it is. And I hope if, you know, maybe in another 3 or 4 years, once we've, oh my gosh, hit the 20-year mark, we can go back and see that it, the bubble may have popped, but the town still, you know, still lives its true nature. Because it really was magical. That's a magical place.
Well, thank you. That's kind of a perfect note to end on.
You've listened to True Crime Cast, distributed by Stoveleg Media. Check out Stoveleg.com to find out more about your hosts and to find other podcasts to listen to. Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.